September 23rd, First Part Lecture by Maitreya at the Feast of Tabernacles 2002.
Okay, let us have a moment of silence and close our eyes. Bring our energy together. Spirit of God come through, feel the unity and oneness to each other, and approach this topic with an open mind and realization that the Spirit of God has done such a wonderful thing, and humanity has to realize that this is indeed the way of salvation. So let's bring our focus to the center of the table. And that is where God the Spirit resides always. So whenever we sit in this round table, God is always present among us. Could we see this is a round table, just like an Arthur's table. And the six couples in the community, they sit around it. And of course the heart is God, is always present among them when they have the meeting or whatever they do in their communities. Well, the topic is not the table today. The topic is the seven angels or seven seals or seven sign that is the seal of the mission. If you notice in the website, we have five presentation only for the second seal, third seal, fourth seal, and fifth seal. And sixth seal. I never could sit down and write a presentation with the seventh seal. It just would not have come. It just would not present itself. And I always had a problem. What am I going to talk about in the seventh seal? And when we had the feast, how many times the seventh seal did we have? At least twice. You know, and I never wrote the presentation at all because it just, there was nothing I could put down and think. And this new information came this year from Brother Frank and new prophecies that came by John and all that. Eventually, well, 1 week just before the feast, I just sat down one night and just it flowed and came right to the paper, and that is the outline that we're going to go through. And of course, my presentation is not as fancy and wonderful as Saraji's, but you know, mine is mostly outlined and right to the point, and that shows between men and women, doesn't it? That shows men intellectual and to just get to the point, and women make it prettier, and then so that's why we need both of them. Otherwise, the world with men would be pretty dry, doesn't it? Everything is outline only, no picture, nothing. So let's go through that. And actually, the only outline is around 12 pages. So we're going to have a lot of things to cover and go over. And of course, these lectures and everything we do here is not only for us only, it's for the future also. So that for future humanity can look to see what we talked about here, and they probably benefit a lot. So the first question is going to be, what are the seven angels? If you go in your presentation, if you have in a presentation in your computer, the PowerPoint, you can go to the second page and probably click and you will find the topic. It says, what are the seven seals? Of course, those they are yellow in the presentation. They are also a URL, is connection. You know, you can connect and go right there and know exactly what the seven seals are. So what is the seven seals? Anybody can tell me what the seven seals are? Nobody knows the seven seals?
Seven seals on the seven messages from the seven prophets from God, each of the religions.
So seven seals are the seven revelations, you know, and all this time everybody was trying to solve the problem of the seven seals in the revelation. And everybody came with different ideas, they explained. Also the book says, do not add to it, do not explain it, and the only person who can explain it is, you know, who? No. The line of the tribe of Judah. The only person can add to this thing is him. If anybody else does it, what's going to happen to them? Bad thing going to happen to them. Because we don't want a bad thing happen to them, but that is true. When I was here, there was what was his name in Texas? The what?
Waco
and
Koresh.
He was trying to write something about the seventh seal. His trouble was he didn't know what it meant, and actually I tried to get in touch with him and say, hello, seventh seal is open here. Here is the meaning. You don't have to worry about it. Just tell the government, I'm sorry, I made a mistake, and so then everything is going to be okay. You know, but of course we weren't able to do that, and if he would knew that, maybe he would be still alive, you know, but he had the feeling that he is the one. And so a lot of people do. A lot of people think they are the chosen one, and God sent them to bring their Christ and everything. Great, okay, but how many are going to be there? Okay, and you have to have that backup, you know, just like you have to have a resume. If you go get a job, what do they ask you? You have a resume, you know, and they look at the resume, okay, you have done this, great, you fit the job. You know, and we have the best resume for, you know, this revelation in the mission. So we have a good resume. Here's 12 pages of resume here that people can look at them. So these revelations are the seven seals are the seven revelations, and that which is the seven part of the greatest sign. The first is, you know, abating of the great forces, comings of life, sacrifice, surrendering, and submission, universalism, and elect, and pure consciousness. So, you can see that this, the mystery of seven seals is revealed here to us. When did the seven seals work? Oh, some people say, okay, when did the seven seals start? Was it when the first begotten son went through? Or even before that, God knew about the seven seals? Okay. Seven seals really started in eternity. Eternally, God knew intuitively what is the best way to create an environment that human can progress to the highest in the fastest way possible. Of course, when I say a new topic, you can just click on your presentation and go to the next thing. I'm not going to say click all the time. I might just say next topic or something like that. Then the whole table is going to be clicking all the time in the presentation. So we can see that, you know, the seven seals is started in eternity. God already knew what's the best way to do it. Okay, but that is why when he projected his spirit to the world, he easily could go through. Just like us, as we learn our lesson each lifetime, next lifetime it's become easier and easier to remember, you know. So it's like a lot of humans go through all their life, they even don't think about God. They're not even interested in meditation. They don't want to know about other religions, you know, but we do. Why? Because we have been in many religions and meditated for so many lifetimes. In this lifetime, we suddenly feel that we're different. We want to do different than everybody else. We're not like everybody else that like regular life. So it's become easier and easier to remember this thing. Okay, now we know it's an eternity. Have humanity ever knew about the seven seals? As we read though, we can see easily that in the beginning, first we got the son knew about the seven seals. And of course, he came back as Adam, as the spiritual teacher for the first humans who were created by God. And he taught them the eternal divine path. They knew about the eternal divine path. They knew about meditation, awakening of the world forces, communities of light, and everything. Okay? But of course, what happened? They did not listen to him. Okay? And that is where the Garden of Eden and fall of man comes, because man became self-centered and instead of listening to God and the Christ, who came, which is the Spirit of God, and came to humanity, instead of listening to him, they became self-centered and they did not listen to him and they fell. Of course, that made them fall from the grace, and falling from grace is hell. You know, that's what hell is really. If you do not have the grace, that's it. You're in hell. You have fallen. You know, and therefore, as it's explained, they fell more and more and more. They eventually became so gross that he gave them the skin of flesh, body. Okay, and then until the flood of Noah, he just had enough of them. Next topic we can click is the why. How did we lose the knowledge of the seven seals? And that's how we lost it. Because, again here, you know, how many people are listening to Mission and this revelation, okay? This is the most fantastic revelation ever have come to humanity, and it explains the God exactly what was his plan was. And here, how many people even are in this room right now? You know, very people come here and listen to it. And they think they already know. They don't. They don't already know. That is the problem. And so that is how we lost the knowledge. But before the flood of Noah, and the flood of Noah, of course, God closed our third eye. You know, he created a new man. Okay, and that's why we don't have our third eye open. We have to meditate. We have to awaken our spiritual forces in order to have our third eye open and see the spiritual world. Yeah. You what? Okay, yeah, there's a question here.
When we leave our body and then we come back, and God sends us back in a new body, we have to go and, like, if we know however many seals of eternity we might have, we have to re-go over those while we come back into the new body. Did they have to do that too? Or
they?
The people before the the Adam, mm-hmm. and all of the, while they knew the eternal time path until the third eye was closed, mm-hmm. did those people also, I mean, they didn't have bodies like ours, but did they go in and out of their body and then have to come back and re-know the eternal time path?
Yeah, but the question is, when we come back, we get a new body. So we have to go through the meditation, through the remember past lifetime and remember, you know what we knew to that point. Did they have also to do it before that? Okay. Apparently they had much longer lifespan. As you say, they lived, 800 years, 900 years, 950 years. So they had a much longer time to, you know, of course they matured slower too. You know, they got married when it was 150 years, you know. So they were kids for 50, 60 years. That's not bad. You can play and be kids for 50, 60 years. And you're a teenager for what? That's not very good. A teenager for 30 years. Anyway, anytime you die, you leave your ego behind. You really go to God. But your ego is hanging somewhere in the universe waiting for you. Okay? At the moment you come back to the body, you pick up your ego and yourself where you left off. But you have lost your brain. Brain is the place that you have your memory in this lifetime. Okay? So when you die, your brain dies and it wipes out. But all the memory of the universe is where? It's in Akashic Records. It's just like a big server somewhere that not only your computer, your workstation, as your brain has all the memory in it, but the server has all the memory in it also, and therefore, when you come back, if you connect yourself to the server, what do you have? You have all the memory. Say, okay, these are my memories. But if you never meditated previous life and you never progressed through it, do you have anything in the server to download to your station? No, you don't. So you don't have that ability to progress as faster as the person who already has the memory in the universe waiting for them. There has never been a prophet who didn't was born from a mother. There has never been a prophet who didn't go through the regular childhood before he realized that he has a mission to do. Okay. So we can see that everybody is born as a child. And then they eventually, you know, recognize and realize, oh yeah. And they are different, of course, very, very, very beginning, they are usually more meditative children, okay, they're more, somehow, you know, everybody realizes, you know, their spirit is different, okay. So, yeah, you have to go through it, but you go past. Even they did the same thing. But, you know, if you live 900 years, you should feel conscious anyway then. If you don't make it, probably God said, you're not going to do it. No, somebody else should go. So in Flood of Noah, when God closed the third eye, okay, he also revealed the teaching or the essence of how to know thyself to Noah, and Noah passed it to his children. It was an oral tradition of telling them how to meditate, how avacuous forces are. You know, even he might give them the word, you know, and they knew about the word, and that's why later on Jewish people called him Yahweh. But at the same time, if you utter the name of the Lord, you would be stoned, because they knew that the name of the Lord, the true name of the word, cannot be pronounced, cannot be uttered, you know, outwardly. And that is why if they done that, they would be stoned in the Hebrew community. And of course, that teaching which came from Noah is the mystical teaching that came from Noah to humanity. Human didn't have any third eye open anymore. They couldn't have the spiritual eye. They couldn't see the spirit. Therefore, they needed a teacher. They needed a revealer. They needed somebody that they can awaken them again to open their third eye. The number E, if you click the presentation, it says Flood of Noah, mystical path or first seal. And this teaching eventually came to us in a written form as Vedas. And of course, the most important part of Vedas is called Vedanta. Vedanta means the end of Vedas. And when you read the Vedanta, the only thing it talks about that Atman and Atman are one. Atman with the small a is the same as Atman, God, with the big A. So the essence of the Vedas or the mystical path is to know that you and God are one. Be still and know that I'm God, or know thyself to know God. Self and God are the same. You know, as I said, in Persian, God is called Khuda, and just like Shirina Khuda, the sweetness of God, and self called Khud. So Khud and Khuda is so similar, isn't it? So if it's me, you can say Khud. But you want to say God, you say Khuda. It's the same thing as Khud and Khuda come from the same root. So knowing thyself is to know God. Do you want to go now know God? Know thyself. Okay, meditate, close your eyes, okay? Yeah. Quiet the senses to know what God is. Of course, after this Flood of Noah, we can go to the next page in the presentation. How many sons did Noah have?
Three.
Of course, you are reading in the... No cheating here. what were their names?
Ham.
You should not eat
not
ham.
I can't remember it.
So, there were three sons of Noah. That was good. That was very good. Okay. I didn't expect you to know the names of the children of Noah. That's good. I expect these guys to know, because they have been here for, you know, so many years, but that's great. And so, there were three sons. Okay? And why, before that, always Bible said what? He had this son, he had this son, he had this son. Suddenly after Shem, God says what? He had three sons. No longer was he begat that and he begat that and begat that. Suddenly Noah had three sons. Because these three sons were new kind of a humans. They did not have their third eye open anymore, and they did not have all the qualities. They no longer were paraviparous. They were five classes of the humanity that was created for the last 5,000 years. Of course, the Ham represents the Shudras, or workers, and warrior class. And Japheth represent intellectual and business people. And Shem is spiritual beings that came to us from, actually, that is why most of the people who came as Abraham and David and great prophets all came from the lineage of Shem. Okay. There's nothing came from Ham or Japheth. Okay. And then, why these five classes? Why God created these five classes? Here we go to the next topic, which is cyclical movement in the society and the five classes in the society. Because God had a plan. Now, with these five classes, God could control the history of humanity and bring it to this point. Okay? We said there were five classes. There were shooters or workers. What the workers do? The most important to the worker is where the next meal come from. They work hard to make their life comfortable. As well as they have their physiological and safety needs is taken care of, what do? They are satisfied. They watch the football game. And they have no other ambition in life, but, you know, just have the physiological and certain is taken care of. If you take care of that, they're happy like a clam. Is that what you say?
Happy like a clam.
You are like a clam. So, just imagine these workers are working in the village and there's a big volcano by the village. And it's rambling and putting fire up and all this. Shooters saying, hey, this is God is angry and worshipping the mountain and afraid of going anything over that. And suddenly one of these people says, I want to go up to see what is up there. And they said, no, go to that. God is there. He's going to kill you. You go there, you know. Probably some of them went up there, fell into the thing and died. Or the legend was, if you go up there, you're going to die. He said, no, I'm going to go and look. He goes there and look. Just a volcano making ashes and thing, and comes back. The moment he comes back, everybody starts worshiping him. He says, hey, he went and saw the God and came back, and he wasn't afraid. So he is God himself now. What does he become? Then become chief of them. They worship him, and that was the courageous one. He was more courageous than a shooter was. Okay? His courageous one become the chief of the tribe, and of course, two chiefs and three chiefs get together and become bigger chiefs, and eventually they create nations and empires. Okay, that is the period of warriors or kingly period of starts. Of course, they started Nimrod, the first one who became the mighty king, and eventually came to Nebuchadnezzar, which was the head of gold of the statue, and he was the highest in among the warrior class. Of course, as their empire expanded, what do they need? They need someone to manage it, to create armies, to create clerics, to create bureaucracy, a kind of the way to take care of the business while the king is going to war and doing things. So they start having what, ministers and, you know, intellectuals that who take care of the different aspects of the war or create war machine. Who create war machine? Scientific minded, intellectual. So intellectual more and more start becoming more prominent in the king's court. And there is a point they kept the king up there, but they really were the people in charge. And of course, one of the characteristics of the intellectuals are what? They love comfort and sensual gratification. Okay. And that's why the money they earn from their cream and their work, they spend to what? To buy material thing. Who did they buy it from? From business people. So business people start getting more powerful. Of course, the zenith of the intellectual time was Renaissance. Okay, this just happened in France. Okay, and in that period, intellectual became the greatest, you know, power on earth, you know, and the period of the business people start at the time of the Industrial Revolution. Industrial Revolution became what? We are spending all our money and things to get goodies that Industrial Revolution brought to humanity, and of course it brought a higher standard of living. At the same time, of course, the shudras, the warriors, the intellectual, all the three classes at the time of the Vaishyan or businessman become what? Become shudras, become worker. What happened? If you're a worker, of course, you're a manual worker somewhere working in a business there. If you're an intellectual, you go to the university. When you get your degree, when you go to work for a business or a company, you know, if you are a warrior or you have the warrior capability, who hires you? Businessman, you become a security or become an go to army, and who controls the army? Business people. So we can see that even, you know, army and all that become what? Become the slave of the business people. And of course, this doesn't have to stay forever. Eventually, the warrior class, the intellectual class, can't take it anymore. You know, as we say, a lot of people, they don't like, you know, the things that happen in the world right now. And they, of course, get together and a new cycle starts and goes overall. So that's why God created these five classes. Of course, the Brahman or the spiritual people, they never get to this cyclical movement because they're not attached to it. You know, they're not neither a warrior, nor a shudras, nor a businessman, nor intellectual. They are just sitting out and they tell people, hey, this is an illusion. You guys are cut to this illusion. Get out of it. All of this is, you know, you can just get along and create comments of life and gain the power of your life and live happily ever after. Your goal is not to have, you know, all these goodies and in your life, but to become divine. So they never really was connected to this cyclical movement in the society. Of course, this explanation is been given by Baba. Baba brought the idea of the PRUT, Progressive Utilization Theory, and he explained this cyclical movement, but of course he never explained how historically also happened. Mission explained it, how historically happened. So the cyclical movement is the Shudra worker, they just work and don't have it. Then the warrior class come, which visit the kingdom and the empires, and then it was the intellectual class, and then Vaishyan class, or business class. Okay. In the time of the workers, of course, as we said, the warrior class is easily took over workers because they saw he's the hero. He went to the top of the mountain. They accept him as leader. There was no revolution or anything happened. In the time of the intellectual class, they snuck in to the king's palace and little by little took over. There was no, you know, big revolution happened. But in the time of the business people, because they make every other class shudra, okay, that is where the idea of the Marx and Engels comes, that they talk about the, you know, communist ideology and the idea of thesis, antithesis, and synthesis. Anything has an antithesis. Anything in the universe always has an opposite to it. Okay? And that is why they fight with each other, and eventually they either merge together or one of them overcome, and whatever happens, either merge or whatever can, become synthesis. Okay. And then that synthesis in itself to become thesis, and that's going to have antithesis and on, and it goes forever. And then, of course, they came with the idea of the worker is against the rich people, business people, so that is thesis, antithesis, that's going to be eventually become a communist, you know, revolution. Okay. So we can see, but they never experienced what happened after that. If communist idea comes, that has become another thesis, and what is the antithesis of the communist? They never explained that, and also we saw that the communist ideology didn't work. You know, after 70 years, Russia fell apart, and then it became what? Now become more business oriented than any other country. But this explanation explains how this cycle continues. Okay, but the only, of course, the only place, as we said, revolution might happen is at the time of the business people, because everybody becomes Shudras and they revolt against that idea. Paravipras are the people that are going to smooth the transition of this cyclical movement by realizing where the humanity is, what's the next step should come, and therefore they smooth it out. Okay? It becomes a rise and evolutionary step instead of a revolution that will happen in every situation that businessmen take over. I'm not going to go into too detail. It's probably it's a topic I think we covered once for the whole lecture or something. It's a long, long, very complicated. And okay, his next topic: historical explanation. Okay, a spiritual plan of the philosopher. That was the four classes. But there was another plan that was a spiritual plan for the last 2,000 years, and that was when God chose Abraham and promised his children and all that. And this is spiritual plan after the flood of Noah. Okay, there were two plans. One was the spiritual plan of the Judo-Christian Islamic Baha'i plan, and the other one was mystical plan. Okay, mystical part of the plan, which these religions didn't emphasize at all. Okay. Okay, next topic, the spiritual after the flood of Noah. As we said, there were two of them. And next topic, Abraham, and Abraham was chosen. I will not, you know, again, we had a great, you know, there is a connection, yeah, there. If you click, you go to the explanation of the second seal, and we explained that the whole lecture was on this topic, the second seal. It was the feast that was theme was the second seal, and we had lecture there, so you can go read about that. In essence, God promised two promises. We can go to the next page. First, God chose Abraham and asked him to leave his family and his land and go to another place, and he did. And God said, oh, because you've listened to me, I bless you, and all the nations will be blessed through you. You know, but it's interesting that God gives this promises, you know, to Abraham, to David, to Adam, to, you know, all of them. But he's really the same person. He gives his promises too. It's a little cheeky there, isn't it? You know, he says, okay, I bless you, I'm going to bless all the earth through you. He's the first begotten son. He's giving it to, you know, everybody say, oh, Abraham was such a great person. Or he gave it to the David, says, you're going to be king forever. He's the same person. He says, you know, Christ, no, he's going to come as a Christ. He's going to come as Muhammad. You know, it's the same person. It's just a little interesting, funny there. You see, that God is giving you all these promises, but he is the same person he's giving it to. So he gives the promise that to the Abraham, and also he gives a promise of to his children. He gives two promises to Abraham. This is number K. One is the birthright, and the other one is scepter. Of course, scepter is the symbol of the kingly spiritual domination, and the promise of the birthright is the birthright that father used to give to the older son, and to, as the material possession. So material blessing of the father would go to the first son. And of course we see in the time of the Isaac, he, instead of he gave it to Esau, he gives it to Jacob, which was the younger. These two promises given to Abraham. And then he changed the name Abram to Abraham. Okay, Abram means father of one nation. Abraham means father of many nations. And give the same promises to him also. Okay, so the first promises to Abram was to his son, which become one nation. And the son of Abram was Ishmael. And there's one nation we call, what? We call them Arabs all over the world. There's one nation called Arabs, which come all the way from Saudi Arabia to Middle East, to North Africa, to Spain, and to South America. These are all Arabs, and God told them he's going to give them a land that it's never going to end, and you cannot count the number. And that's what it is. It's all over the place. So, and of course, the spiritual domination came by Prophet Muhammad. Okay, promise given to Abraham, Ishmael, okay, Prophet Muhammad brought the idea of the surrender and submission to God, the fourth seal. The kingdom was given to Muslims for a short period of time, as Christ predicted at the end of the Christ's mission. What did he tell Jews? That the kingdom will be taken away from me and given to another nation. Christ never created any nation. He never was king. He never had any, never passed any laws. Who did that? Prophet Muhammad. And also, actually, Islamic teaching is very close to Jewish teaching. They're very similar. Actually, they have a lot of laws, and they have to follow those laws in very similar they are. And we know Jews and Muslim, Arabs, they have come from the same father. And Muslims are from Ishmael, and Jews are from Isaac. Now they're in each other's throat, and they're killing each other, two brothers. But you can see, you know, two brothers are doing that together. But the kingdom was taken and gave to the Muslim. It is right there another sign that God has done all this thing, you know, to this point. If Christian and Muslim and Jews, they realize this, they should get together. Mm-hmm. At least these three religions should come together easily. And of course, from lineage of Prophet Muhammad also come Bab. You know, Bab also comes as the next prophet after Prophet Muhammad, and he bring the concept of universalism, and that he is from the lineage of Prophet Muhammad. Of course, another thing in this lecture, I'm going to give this lecture as a third person, so I'm going to relate to Maitreya as another person that I'm talking about, because later people might give this lecture, and they are going to relate as Maitreya, and also this way we can relate to the teaching. Otherwise, I'm going to go me after what the lecture is going to be me and I. So, Maitreya in this case also is from the lineage of Prophet Muhammad, because my ancestry also called Sayyid. Sayyid in Islamic countries means the person who is from the lineage of Prophet Muhammad. Actually, if you look at the mullahs, there's two kind of mullahs. The term is either black or white or any other color. If it is black, means that person is a Sayyid. He is from the lineage of Prophet Muhammad. We can go to the next page. The promise also given to Abraham, as we said. God changed the name of Abraham to what? To Abraham means the father of many nations, and he changed the name of Sarai to Sarah, means the our princess, and then promised them a son also. Of course, Sarah doesn't believe. You know, it's very believe to make Sarah believe. If you can make Sarah believe, you can make anybody believe. So, Sarah doesn't believe. She's the giggling and saying, no, God, you know, I'm not going to have a child. I'm 90 years old, and my husband is 99, and it's not going to happen. God says, yes, it will. I said, it's going to happen, so it will. And that's exactly what the promise is given to us. The kingdom of heaven, God said, will come, therefore it will. Also, it seems there's such a small group, and the world is so powerful, his kingdom will come. And of course, you know, that does it give the same promise to Isaac, the son of Abraham, a scepter and a birthright, a material position. Actually, he promises Jacob more than just one nation. He promises many nations, okay? And a company of nations. And he promises Abraham a nation, to Isaac, and then to Jacob, or Israel, he promises many nations, or a company of nations. And of course, they eventually become the United States, a company of nations, United States, united, more than one state. It's states that they united. And of course, England, was his kingdom was so vast that the sun never sat on it. So we can see, you know, God again says he will do this thing, and he does them, and that is our salvation. Of course, Israel eventually become a nation, and they put an example for humanity for the second seal, that God wants to be the king of the comings of light. That is what the comings of light is. In the comings of light, God is the king, and his laws are the laws that in the community has to be followed. It's not an intellectual thing, no, we're going to talk about it and discuss it, you know, let's do differently than what God said. But God said, this is the way it should be done, and the community said, yes, that is based on the scripture. God said, it should be in this way, and therefore we will follow them. Actually, the children of Israel did have the same kind of a setup in the system. They had judges. They didn't have king. Judges would be anointed, you know, by people, would emerge from the people, and then they would put oil in their head, and they become anointed judges, and they also were the spiritual source for the community. Okay, but of course the neighbors of the children of Israel, they all had chains and all that, and the people in Israel, the Hebrews said, no, we want king too. You know, we don't want to have judges, okay? And of course, Samuel was judge at that time and goes to God and said, God, they rejected me. And God said, no, they didn't reject you. They rejected me because you were my mouthpiece. You were the person who was coming through, and they don't want you anymore. They are cutting themselves off from me by doing that, because if the head is not connected to God, the body is going to be completely, you know, disconnected. So they choose their king. They said, okay, God said, okay, go ahead, choose your king. But I tell you, you're going to be disconnected from God. It's going to be from my law. They choose Saul. Saul was a tall, handsome man. So they said, well, that's what we want. And what happened? He did exactly to them what he said, you know. Then God said, okay, you guys don't know what they're doing. I'm going to choose you king. And he chose David as the king and promised, you know, that the children is going to be king forever. That's the discussion you remember we had with his brother Frank. But so he still says, we have to continue the tradition. But when the seven angels come, this is a new heaven and new earth. It's a new thing. All traditions come to stop. The children of Israel divided to two nations, the house of Judah and the house of Israel. The house of Judah are the one eventually go to Syria and go to Iran and Persia, and Brother Frank believes that I am from that assembly of those. And of course the house of Judah are the ones that prophesied that Christ will come from, the Shiloh will come from Judah. Okay, the house of Israel was conquered and was taken away by Assyrians. The people knew Assyrians are going to come to Israel and conquer them. A lot of them left before they come. Some of them went to the north. But they couldn't go to the south because Egypt was their enemy. If they couldn't go east because it was Assyrians coming to them, the only way they could go was north, northwest, or west. Okay? And of course, some people believe that the tribe of Dan, they were fishermen. So they took their ships and left before, you know, Assyrian came. And they eventually end up in England and in Europe, the Danube, Danish, and all those names with the Dan in Europe, they say from the tribe of Dan, which came to Europe and settled them. And also a lot of them went to north and northeast, which created a kingdom in the north of Iran called Khazar. And they said they are Jewish people. And eventually they left from that kingdom to Russia and Europe and become Jewish people in Europe. And they might belong to the United States. But the tribe of Judah, this kingly Messiah is supposed to come, it was the house of Judah. It was in the south, not in the north. This is when the northern kingdom are attacked by Syrians, and they left. Okay, we can go to the page that it says, the house of Judah also was conquered. Okay, we are in the topic of the house of Judah also was conquered, and the royalties and craftsmen were taken away by King Nebuchadnezzar. So the tribes come to Europe and to the United States, and eventually they could use England as a nation, America as United Nation. Also the House of Judah, Southern Kingdom, which the Messiah was supposed to come from, because Shiloh is going to come from Judah, also was conquered by Nebuchadnezzar, but Nebuchadnezzar take them to Iraq, and later on, when Cyrus conquered Iraq, they were taken to Iran. And actually there is a stiff-toothed Jewish community, very strong Jewish community in Iran, in southern side, and in Tehran. As one of my best friends was a Jewish person when I was in Iran, you know, when I was growing up in high school. Okay, and the Jews returned, but the house of Israel never returned. The Jews went into Iran. What did Cyrus do? Cyrus sent them back and gave them enough resources to rebuild the temple. And that's what we can see. Only the Jewish tribe, Benjamin, and Levites with them return. Only three tribes of Israel. The rest become the Northern Kingdom. That's what Christ was talking about. That woman in the north. You remember on the well, you know, he was talking about that woman, and that woman was in the Northern Kingdom, and he was telling Christ that we don't have to go to Jerusalem. We can, you know, worship God in this mountain. Okay, and when the Messiah comes, he's going to tell us what is the truth. And Christ told him, you neither have to go to Jerusalem, nor you have to do it in the mountain. You have to do it in your spirit. What is he talking about? In your spirit, the only way you can worship God in your spirit through meditation. You know, going to your spirit means meditation, closing your eye and worshiping God in your body, and because your body is the temple of God. So the Jews come back to Israel, and they build the temple, and they live there, and then Christ comes. Christ comes as Shiloh, the promise that Judah will bring the Messiah. So he is the fulfillment of the scepter given to Isaac. And he, of course, becomes the Messiah. He says, when the Shiloh comes, that promise is finished. You know, it's done, it's over. And House of Israel come to the United States and England, and they created two nations that we know now. Okay, next page. Okay, Christ came as the Christ Ben Joseph. That's another terms that I learned from Brother Frank, and that makes a lot of sense. He said there are two Christs. We believe every prophet is Christ. But he says that Christ was the Christ Ben Joseph, which brought the sacrifice or the third seal. And Maitreya is the Christ Ben Adam, which is seventh angel. Why? Why the first Christ was Ben Joseph, but Maitreya is Ben Adam? Does anybody have any idea?
One brought the seal and the other one brought the conclusion.
Very good. Who was Adam? The Adam, first Adam who came to humanity. Did he know about all the seven seals? He knew about the seven seals, didn't he? No. So, but when Christ came, which seal did he bring? The third seal. Very good, very close. And so, is the son of Joseph, but really, Maitreya is the son of Adam, because Adam and he both know the seven seals. The whole, you know, seal. That's what I accepted from him, because it made a lot of sense. Because now we have exactly what Adam taught the first human if they were created. You have the whole truth that's been given to you. And that is why we can create an environment that God intended then to be created. Okay. But it never manifested. We have to have the history, and God has to show us, if we do it ourselves, that's what we're going to have. We're going to have a mess. Just look at how many wars were there, you said?
Thousands
of them. In 6 years, we have thousands of wars and destruction is still going on, and they still are talking about peace, and still United Nations tries to, you know, bring peace, and they cannot. Because it's not based on God. Okay, actually there's a group in the United Nations, they got in touch with me, what's the global nation, the creative idea of creating a world government, you know, and they wanted me to join them as a
the spiritual advisor.
A spiritual advisor to them, and they're very impressed with our teaching and everything, you know. But I told them, look, you know, we have a conflict here. I already know how to create the kingdom of heaven on earth. And you're telling me I just come become an advisor to what you have is good ideas, but they are not God ideas.
Okay.
And we have to go with the God ideas. Well, it was a couple of weeks ago. I haven't heard from them, you know. But they are trying to bring peace for the last 1,000 years, and God think this is the way to do it. Okay. He said, if this is the way at the beginning, he says, no, this is the way to do it. And that is the way it can be done. So he gave us the lesson of history, so we realize how a mess we're going to make ourselves if we don't listen to God. And now God sends the way it can be done. Maitreya is the only prophet, messenger, who is from both lineage, Abraham and Abraham, from Prophet Muhammad and Isaac. Okay. There is no other prophet you can find that have both lineage. That's another thing we unify, lineage of the two prophets. So that was the historical plan. That was the Judeo-Christian Islamic Baha'i's plan. Okay, that God chose Abraham. There was another plan, a parallel plan for the mystical plan. That this came from flood of Noah, and the flood of Noah, God gave the teaching of the mystical path to Noah, and he passed to his children, and that is why every religion you found mystical. But mystical understanding is actually a spirit of all religions. Okay. If you do not have understanding of mystical teaching, you don't understand your religion. Period. You know, that's why we can see saints in Christianity, they're so highly regarded, because they have had an experience with God. Okay? They're not just didn't say, oh yeah, I accepted a couple of dogmas, I'm Christian. They can explain God. They were different. They were presenting a spirit of God to the Christian. Sufis, why they are so well known in Islamic, you know, tradition? Because they had experience with God, you know. They realized, yes, me and God are one. You know, that's what the Sufi jumps and says, Anallah. Anallah means I am God. And of course, Orthodox Muslim, they were petrified. How can you become God? God is God, Muhammad is Prophet, and we are just here to believe a couple of dogmas and that's it. We are safe. But Sufis said, no, we cannot just believe that. We have to. Actually, in the beginning, they didn't believe, you know, in the Islamic tradition, but the Orthodox gave them such a hard time that eventually they said, okay, that's a God and that is Prophet Muhammad. But Prophet Muhammad himself, they argued that Prophet Muhammad himself had spiritual experiences. So he had a direct relationship with God, and that is what he understood God so well. Therefore, we have to do the same thing. And then they left him alone a little bit. Okay? And in Judaism, you know, Kabbalah, you know, they have Kabbalah teaching, and that is mysticism in Judaism. And many, many other spirited old religion, like shaman in Australia or Africans, you know, they believe in everything has a spirit. The tree has a spirit, the earth has a spirit, and they have to create a relationship with them. But of course, the very organized way, or one in as a mystical path, is the religion came through Adam and eventually came as the Vedas, as we explained before. That more deeply meditated on and manifested. But my own experience, my first experience of spirituality was mystical path. Okay. If I didn't have that first experience of meditation and seeing that God is everything, I wouldn't be here. I would probably have a job as an accountant or the managerial thing or teaching or something, somewhere doing my work. But that experience just completely turned my life around. And that's why we see that even in my case, the first mystical experience is the more important than the dogmas that everybody has in the religions. Therefore, we have to tell everybody our religion, close your eyes. Okay. Just shut them up, close your eyes. See, then maybe you experience something, and then you say, oh, okay, I was wrong, these were all dogmas. You can have the same experience as I did. Okay? Therefore, we are all have to strive for that experience, for that direct relationship with God. Of course, maybe God wouldn't give you all this revelation that God gave through me, but He will give you something that you can hang in to say, yes, I have had some experience with God. Okay. Of course, from the mystical path, eventually came Baba. Baba was the sixth seal. He brought the concept of Sadhvitva and Paravipra. He was from the Hindu tradition and had fulfilled many prophecies that was foretold for coming of Baba as the incarnation of Shiva. And he actually purified the Tantra, you know, teaching and brought the concept of Sadhvipra and the cyclical movement to humanity. Next topic is kind of parallel plan of the mystical path. We continue on that. Mystical paths are brought back and unified with the rest of God's plan. Again, we unify the mystical path and the rest of the plan of God, which was Judeo-Christian, Islamic Baha'i, the one plan, the mystical path, another plan. No, mission of Maitreya is the only revelation. Not even Baha'is have done that. Not even Baba have done that. Baba never talked about Judeo-Christian, Muslim part of the plan. He didn't know. He just knew about the Hindu philosophy and Tantra, and he purified them, and we brought beautiful concept of Sadhvipra. But mission of Maitreya is the only revelation, okay, that brings all of them together and gives the whole picture and says, here it is. You know, this is the two plans, now they are one. You know, they are unified as one plan for humanity. Okay? Maitreya is the only revealer that brought all the path, Judeo-Christian, Islamic Baha'i, plus mystical path together. He has opened the book, sealed with the seventh seal. That book, sealed with the seventh seal, has all the truth in it, all the revelation. Because it unifies all the plan together and reveals it to humanity. And now we can clearly see where each of them fall. Okay? Just it's interesting, you go and look at these preachers, you know, that they condemn, you know, Buddhists, and they say devil worshippers. That's a part of God's plan also. We can see in this book, in this revelation, it clearly says that is also being a part of God's revelation. Now we covered the prophecies and saw these two plans. Also, there was the prophecies of the end time. Okay. Now, all these things happened to this point, and then God also says there's going to be an end time. You know? And that end time, the prophets have had that vision, just like Daniel, you know, Ezekiel, and, you know, all those prophets who had this vision, they were told, seal the vision. Don't reveal them to anybody. That's why we can see that nobody has this teaching and reveal this truth, you know, before this revelation. Because God said, don't reveal it. Okay. That's what we said. We can see Daniel says, I saw the vision, but he doesn't explain to us what that vision was. Okay. Or same thing as Ezekiel and other prophets. They put it in such a elaborate, you know, way of explaining it and put it in a very mystical way that's very hard to understand. So there is the prophecy of the end time, and that vision is sealed. The whole plan of God is in book sealed with the seven seals. As we said, the only way you can know that plan is that book is revealed to humanity. Okay, now that book is revealed, that's what we who are prepared for it, we see it so clearly. And those who are still hanging to the dogma, they chant. Because they are still limited with little things they know intellectually, okay, but they do not have the direct experience with God, so they cannot see clearly that is God's doing. Okay. He sent all this religion. He did set, close the eye of human and send the teaching of mystical path. And all of them are from God. There is no separation between any religions on earth. The whole plan of God is in the book sealed with the seven seals. This book only can be opened with the Lion of the Tribe of Judah. Of course, I always thought, well, it's a reincarnation. You know, God promised David to he was going to be coming back, be king. He will be incarnated again and again. So that promise would be that way. But now we know also he showed it other way. The Jewish people, the Judah, the tribe of Judah was the one who were taken to Assyria and went to Persia. And of course, what happened, eventually I was born and I came here to United States to do my education, and suddenly I end up here talking to you guys about the seven seals. Okay? And the only person can open that book is one from the lineage of the tribe of Judah. No one can claim that they can open or know the seven seal or even approach Revelation and say, oh, we know what Revelation means. They can't. Because they don't have the credential. No, that's the only person can do it. That's what it says. No one could open the book but the Lion of the Tribe of Judah. That's why, again, we go back to what John was saying about the New Agers. They're saying, oh, everybody, fine, you know, just meditate, don't worry, don't listen to anybody. God says no. The Word of God says no. You can't do that. The only person who can do it is the Lion of the Tribe of Judah. And that is what you have to listen to, not to anybody who says, okay, I got a little, you know, realization, I can be your teacher, or I can take you to God. They can't. The only time that the whole universe rejoiced was then the book was opened, that book is opened, and God is indeed glorified. Jalalullah. Okay. Never, ever the whole universe rejoiced, but when that book is open. The whole universe is rejoicing. God and heaven is rejoicing because this book is open now, but humanity still is not rejoicing. That is something that we have to see. Why? Why aren't they rejoicing? Why can't they see this? That clearly. Why? That is the question. Okay, prophecies of the coming of the seventh angel. How can we find the prophet of God, and in this case, the seventh angel? How can we find them? Okay, somebody comes and says, I'm a prophet. Would you just accept them? I say, I'm the seventh angel. Would you accept me? Just, well, you would, but... I mean... but anybody would come and say, I'm a prophet, should you accept them? I talked to the dead. There's a program recently coming up. Everybody is talking about it. I'm talking to dead. Should we follow him and say, well, it's from God? This God said, you know them by knowing the dead people. So we can see that, you know, how we know a prophet. How God sends a prophet. Doesn't he? Exactly. He says, I'm going to send this prophet with all these prophecies. Okay, Christ came. He fulfilled prophecies. Okay. Prophet Muhammad came. He fulfilled the prophecies. Bob came. He fulfilled the prophecies. Okay. Baba came. He fulfilled the prophecies. Okay. So, we have to look for the prophecies and to see if the prophet has fulfilled them. The seventh angel has fulfilled all the prophecies of all the prophets before him. When I started the mission, I loved the teaching. I wasn't looking for prophecies. You know, the only thing I knew was that I was born in the east of Tibet and west of Jerusalem. And I said, wow, that's great. You know, that's one prophecy fulfilled. Jews are, and Christians are waiting for him to come from east. There it is. Tehran is the east of Jerusalem. And Hindus and Buddhists are waiting for him to come from the west. Tehran is the west of it. I said, that's good enough for prophecies. And then Ma comes along and she just keep saying, oh, look at this, look at that, look, I want this, I want that. She put them together and I said, oh, that's great. Now we have 10, 15 prophecies. And then John comes and says, no, we have all these other things that she just piled them up on me. And then, of course, Brother Frank's come even put more on it. Okay, so, okay, great. So now I realize, actually, mission, that there has never been a prophet that had fulfilled so many prophecies. Never, ever. And also, all the prophecies that other prophets fulfill is also fulfilled to this mission. All of them. You know, just like we have to be from the lineage of Prophet Muhammad. It is. We have to be from the lineage of King David. It is. You know. Also, still that coming from the east of Jerusalem and west of Tibet stands at all. No, that's true. So, many other things that, you know, fulfilled with other prophets also. So, we fulfill all the prophecies also. If somebody says, okay, the only way I'm going to believe in him, if he fulfilled these prophecies, you can say, yes, he did. You know, actually, when we were writing in the news group in that period, the Baha'i said, well, but he was supposed to be born in Tehran. I said, yes, he has. He's the spirit of all the prophets before him, combined, unification. Again, you can see the why he has all the spirit, as we said. He is the Christ Ben Adam. Only Adam knew the seven seals and all this level, the truth. Therefore, he is the spirit of all of them. Prophet Muhammad, you know, we manage things, we want to create a kingdom. Just maybe even pass laws later on. Or something. Christ, you know, we teach sacrifice. We accept all of those teachings before us. And therefore, we accept the spirit of all the prophets. Next, prophecy is fulfilled by Maitreya. Now also, what prophets are fulfilled through this mission? Let's go through them. Of course, I'm not going to go through detail of them, but I'm going to just explain and then probably just say the very basic of them. Open the seven seals. Reveal the book sealed with the seven seal, though. His birthplace, time, etc. Was born in Persia. That was the prophecy, that he will be born in Persia. He is descendant of Persian kings. That's what John explained to you guys yesterday. Why? How? He is a descendant of Persian. I like that one. I keep saying it. He came after the destruction of the Persian Empire. Before we reached out in 1980, when I met Saraji and we decided, you know, to start the mission together, you know, 6 months later, after I decided to stay to the United States, the 2,500 years of Persian Empire just went down the drain. You know, you guys remember the revolution of Tehran and Khomeini and Shah was disposed of, and never happened in Iran in such a strong way to get rid of the kingdom. It was a 2,500 years of kingdom and it went down the drain completely. He also descended of King David and Prophet Muhammad. He cometh in the cloud. What does that mean, he cometh in the cloud? Confusion. Are we confused in this earth right now? Are we having problem? Trouble? It's confusion, for sure. Every eye shall see him. What does that mean, every eye shall see him? How can everybody can see me? That's one of the meaning. If your third eye is open, if you have had mystical experience, if you have been prepared, when you hear the mission, you say, yeah, that makes sense. You know, Nothing else makes sense to me to this point. Just like me, I never anything made sense to me. Not my traditional religion, not other religion. None of them made sense until this revelation came. And said, yeah, of course, Baba makes sense because I had an experience. And also, well, you want to see me? Go to internet, click on our website, and there it is. I'm there, my word, my picture, you know, you can see them. So God fulfills in so many different ways. Mystical way, internally, and human way, externally. Externally, you can see me anywhere in the world. The only thing you need is a very cheap computer and an internet connection. You're there. You can do it. As a thief of the night. What does that mean, as a thief of the night? What the thief does?
Quietly
comes in and sneaks in when nobody is looking and steals things away, you know. Is the mission quiet? Has been quiet for 22 years. They are still quiet, you know. They don't know what's happening to them. They think they are powerful, but God is the most powerful and He will prevail. Okay. So they are sneaking in like a thief of the night. To the West. Did I come to the West? It's been prophesied, actually, the prophecy that Christ will come to the West has been a very long tradition in the Western culture. It was in Europe, it came to the United States, and a lot of people would know about it, and a lot of people had visions that He will come. They will talk about it. He will come to the United States, to America. That's also prophecies, even in the Baha'i, you know, prophecies that have been said is going to come in Mormon prophecies, and before even Mormons, there were some visionaries in England, Irish tradition, that there have been some visionaries that they have seen that Christ will come in America to a city. And that's an interesting one, that even the city has been, you know, pinpointed, and that is the Joseph Smith, the Mormons, he was a visionary, and if you go to that URL that I have here, the part about the Joseph Smith, that it says how the, you know, Christ comes to the Rocky Mountain, west of the U.S. in the spring of 1844, Joseph Smith received a vision called the White Horse Prophecy. He saw that Jesus would return in Rocky Mountains. Later, Smith saw that the return of Jesus would be in America in the temple described by Ezekiel in Bible, which would be located in the Rocky Mountain. Mission start in Denver, the middle of the Rocky Mountain. That is the Rocky Mountain. Rocky Mountain also goes through the New Mexico. And is close to Rio Rancho and Albuquerque. Another vision is kingdom will start in the city. West, we were talking about city, right? That's not, how do you find the city? It says kingdom will start in the city west of the large river. Joseph Smith was the founder of the Mormon Church. He saw in a vision that kingdom of God would be west of a large river. What is Rio Grande means? A river, isn't it? And where is your rancho?
West.
When we moved to the rancho, they had a contest. That what should we call the city, this city? And then they came with the name City of the Vision. So this is the vision that will manifest to the city. That's another interesting thing. Is the west of, and Rio Rancho is the west of the Rio Grande, a large river. Also, at this time, he, Joseph Smith, saw a vision of a great river, and Jesus was on the west side of the river. He traveled on the Mississippi, he thought it's going to be Mississippi area. He traveled on the Mississippi River until he saw a mountain and a town in a valley west of the river. He told his followers that this town would now be called Nauvoo. He said it was a Greek word meaning plateau. First of all, the city had to have a mountain, to have a mountain, has to have a river, and the city itself had to be in the west, and it has to have a plateau. Of course, those sisters couldn't find the city. Why couldn't they find the Rio Rancho? It didn't exist. In that time, it did not exist. Rio Rancho was actually started building around, what, 30, 40 years ago? You know, there wasn't such a city. It wasn't built. God knew it's going to be built, but Joseph Smith didn't. He thought he's going to found it. So, as was said, God has given. Where is going to come here? Even the city, the only thing he didn't give it to us, our plot number, you know, the number of the house, what it is. So, we can stop here probably and pick up tomorrow.